Chapter 34 The Iceman and Others. In September 1991, German climbers Helmut and Erika Simon spotted something brown protruding from ice and meltwater at the base of a gully some 3,210 meters up in the Alps near Hülseblock on the border between Italy and Austria. They realized it was the skull, back, and shoulders of a man who had his face in water. At first, police assumed he was the victim of a climbing accident, and he became simply corpse 91/619 on the local coroner's dissection table. Coroners are the officials who certify deaths. But the official soon realized that the body was very old and called in the archaeologists. An excavation was organized at the site, now buried under fresh snow. Diggers used a steam blower and a hairdryer to recover a grass cloak, leaves, tufts of grass, and wood fragments. By the end of the quick excavation, the recovery team had named the victim Otzi, the Iceman. He had put down his axe, bow, and backpack on a sheltered ledge. Then he had lain down on his left side, his head resting on a boulder. His relaxed limbs suggested that the exhausted man had gone to sleep and frozen to death within a few hours. Otzi was preserved undisturbed in cold storage, just like a side of beef. A complex detective story now unfolded. Experts radiocarbon dated the body to between 3350 and 3150 BC, the early European Bronze Age. They calculated that he stood 1.6 meters tall and was 47 years old when he died some 5,000 years ago. Otzi was a self-sufficient man and had spent his last day on the move. He was carrying a leather backpack on a wooden frame, a flint dagger, and a copper-bladed axe with a wooden handle. He also had a long bow made of yew wood and a roe deerskin quiver with 14 arrows. He had spare arrowheads on him, together with dry fungus and iron pyrite, equipment for lighting fires. His clothing was well-suited to the mountains. He wore a sheepskin loincloth fastened with a leather belt. Suspenders from the belt held up a pair of goatskin leggings. His outer coat was a sturdy garment made from alternating strips of black and brown skin from several different animals. Over his coat he wore a cape of twisted grass, just like those worn in the Alps as recently as the 19th century. A bearskin cap fastened below his chin kept his head warm. Bearskin and deerskin shoes, stuffed with grass, protected his feet. The grass kept in place by string socks. Height and age calculations were routine stuff, but where had Otzi lived? A research team used his bones, intestines, and teeth to answer that question. Dental enamel is fixed when a tooth is first formed, and so the teeth the researchers examined contained traces of chemical elements from whatever foods Otzi had eaten when he was 3 to 5 years old. Bone remineralizes or regenerates every 10 to 20 years, and so the researchers also had information on where the Iceman had lived as an adult. He was born in one of the many river valleys of the southern Tyrol, the most likely candidate being the Isac Valley, south of the mountains. Otzi's bone chemistry showed that he had lived at a higher altitude as an adult. The scientists zeroed in on the tiny fragments of mica in Otzi's intestine. They believe that this mineral came from grindstones used to prepare his food. Potassium-argon dating, see Chapter 27. Of the specks, identified them as belonging to mica formations in the lower Vinsku area, west of the Isac Valley. Otzi's biography was complete. He had spent his early years in the lowlands and then lived in the nearby mountains. He never moved more than about 60 kilometers from his birthplace. The Iceman's corpse also provided a wealth of medical information. His bones revealed that he had experienced malnutrition in his 9th, 15th, and 16th years. He suffered from an irritating intestinal parasite caused by whipworms, the eggs of which were in his intestines. Two fleas came from his clothing. The smoke he had inhaled from indoor fires had made Otzi's lungs as black as those of a heavy tobacco smoker today. His hands and fingernails were battered, scarred, and chipped from constant manual labor. Otzi's stomach was empty, and so he was probably weak and hungry at the time of his death. It is almost as if we are meeting Otzi face to face. But what was he doing in the mountains, and how did he die? Originally, the researchers thought that Otzi had died a peaceful death, perhaps caught out in bad weather. But they changed their minds when they discovered an arrowhead buried deep in his left shoulder. There is also a dagger wound on one of his hands, as if he had defended himself against a close-quarters attack. DNA came into play again. Samples revealed that he had fought with at least four people. In the end, it was the arrow wound that proved fatal, causing him to bleed to death. Perhaps Otzi had fled into the mountains and died of his wounds at high altitude. The Iceman has a surprisingly complete biography, pieced together at enormous expense by teams of scientists from many countries. Hundreds of scientific papers describe his body and his medical conditions. It was the deep freeze of the high Alps that allowed us to study him. The cold preserved his clothing, equipment, and weapons. We know far more about Otzi than we do about millions of other prehistoric hunters and fisherfolk, farmers and cattle herders, Roman soldiers and medieval craftspeople. He gives us a vivid impression of the difficult conditions in which he and others of the time lived. We're lucky to know what we do from this single, humble individual. The find reminds us that archaeology is about people, not things. Archaeologists have always been fascinated by human skeletons. We have long relied on biological anthropologists to get at the details of the lives as they were lived. They can determine the sex of a skeleton and its age, identify lower backs ruined by hard labor, or leg bones bowed by constant horse riding. Recently, we have moved beyond bones and can look at the once living human being behind them. Thanks to cutting-edge medical technology, even skeletons can be made flesh-and-blood bodies from the tiniest of clues. Biological anthropologists use DNA to trace human migrations, and they use medical imaging technology to study mummies without unwrapping them. Analysis of bone chemistry tells us where people lived their early lives and what diets they preferred. Thanks to medical science, we know more about the Iceman than he knew himself. Ancient bodies, whether well-preserved or mere bones, are a hot topic in today's archaeology. Thousands of individuals have come down to us, most of them skeletons, but also a few well-preserved bodies found in swamps. Ancient Egyptian and Peruvian mummies are mines of information about both noble and common folk. Medical imaging has peered through their bandages and revealed the painful dental abscesses, or swellings, suffered by Egyptians of 3,000 years ago. They must have been in agony for months or even years. Occasionally, a sacrificial victim is found, and so we learn of violent death. In Peru, some 6,210 meters up in the southern Andes, American anthropologist Johann Reinhardt and his Peruvian assistant Miguel Zarate came across the mummy bundle of a 14-year-old girl who was sacrificed 5 centuries ago. She wore a finely woven dress and leather moccasins. Scans of her skull showed that she had died from a swift blow to the head. Blood from the head wound had pushed her brain to one side. The wounds inflicted in hand-to-hand medieval battles could be horrendous. I once examined the bones of some of those who had died during one such encounter. At Towton Hall in northern England, a burial pit containing 38 individuals left a shocking impression of the savagery of medieval warfare. The victims had died in a bloody conflict fought during a snowstorm on March 29, 1461, during a series of conflicts known as the Wars of the Roses. All the skeletons were of men aged between 16 and 50. They were active, healthy individuals whose bodies displayed signs of hard toil from an early age, as one might expect of peasant farmers. Some also displayed elbow injuries resulting from pulling longbows. Most of the dead perished from savage blows to the head, but there was one whose face had been cut in half by a sword. Another man had suffered at least 8 blade wounds from close combat before being killed by being struck on the head. Crossbow bolts, arrowheads, and warhammers inflicted terrible injuries, many of them fatal. The forearms of several men carried wounds caused by fending off blows from attackers. The men had perished in a bloodbath. Not that life at that time was easy for anyone. Scurvy and rickets, both diseases resulting from vitamin deficiencies, were common. Apart from Otzi, the most thorough research on individuals has examined well-known figures from history. Pharaoh Ramses II, 1304 to 1212 BC, is the best known of all Egyptian kings. He saw military service when young and had more than 100 sons and, literally, countless daughters. Ramses lived a very long time. He died at the age of 92 at a time when most people could only expect to live into their 20s or 30s. The pharaoh was mummified and buried in the Valley of the Kings. French experts used the latest medical technology on his mummy. They admired the king's fine nose, its shape maintained by peppercorns that had been stuffed into it by his embalmers, the people who had preserved his body. The pharaoh had suffered from arthritis, painful dental abscesses, and poor circulation. Hardly surprising, given his age. As pharaoh, Ramses had lived off the fat of the land. But Egyptian commoners certainly did not. Theirs were lives of ceaseless toil. A recent study looked at workers' burials in a cemetery at El Amarna, capital of the pharaoh Akhenaten in the 14th century BC. See chapter 17. Almost all of them died in their 20s and 30s. Their bones display telltale signs of malnutrition, while years of back-breaking labor had crushed spines, broken limbs, and caused chronic arthritis in arms and legs. There are more recent rulers whose bodies have been recovered by historical research and the spade. King Richard III of England, 1452-85, died fighting his rival, the future King Henry VII, in the final battle of the Wars of the Roses in Leicestershire, central England. Little was known about Richard. Historical records stated that he was deformed, though that was not known for sure. It could perhaps have been a metaphor for his bad character. Richard's body had been stripped naked and taken to Leicester, where it was put on display. He was then buried without ceremony in a Franciscan friary, a type of monastery. The site of his grave was known long after the friary was demolished, but it came to be forgotten in the 19th century. Prolonged historical detective work located the friary site under a city center car park, where excavations began in 2012. On the very first day, two leg bones were uncovered. The skeleton had been crammed into a grave that was slightly too small. The backbone was curved in an S shape, and the hands were behind the body as if they had been tied. Everything pointed to a hasty burial. The skeleton was that of an adult male who suffered from severe curvature of the spine, which made one shoulder higher than the other. There were major injuries to the skull. Was this King Richard's body? The researchers turned to DNA for the answer. Samples from the bones were compared to the DNA of living descendants of the monarch, and it was confirmed that the skeleton was indeed that of a deformed Richard III. His body was reburied in Leicester Cathedral. Today's medical technology is helping archaeologists write history in the kind of detail that was unimaginable even just a generation ago. Some physicians were X-raying Egyptian mummies in the early 1900s, but nowadays we can tell where someone spent his youth and where he traveled. We are becoming biographers writing people's life stories.